Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Oh, yeah, it's Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. As Bill's rookie minicamp begins today, and today's show is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It is beautiful outside. I know most of the office is golfing at some point in the next 3 days.
It's a little cooler today, but take it.
But yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I got the kind of quarter zip short combo going on.
Yep.
I'm happy.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a great day. Mm-hmm. Let's have ourselves a weekend. Have yourself the weekend you want to, because the weather's going to make that available for you.
This week has also taken forever, by the way.
It has. And I think that you and I said this off air, and I think it made the most sense. I think it feels that way because this is the first week of true off season. Last week here, there was some hoopla.
Yep.
This week, not so much. And therefore, we finally are getting into those interesting days, the beginning of the true off season. Because rookie minicamp doesn't carry as much drama as your normal minicamp if you have storylines. Like the will he, won't he, James Cook sort of thing could be a storyline. I doubt it will. The man put up an Instagram post with him hugging Josh Allen. I think everything's perfectly fine, just like it was always was. Again, that was next year's problem. Always was, always will be, is my prediction. So now that I predicted it, that's going to go haywire.
I think the only rookie minicamp that got a lot of juice to it, first round quarterback pick. I think that's the only one that's going to be like, all right, we got to zero in on this.
Not this year. It's about the third and fifth round quarterbacks that were taking.
Yeah. Cleveland forced themselves to have some juice. That's probably right.
Cleveland made themselves a story for rookie minicamp.
It's probably right.
But
for most years, I think that's right, where unless you have that first-round rookie QB where you're like, okay, this is the franchise guy now. This is who we're dealing with the next, at worst, 2 years.
Yep. But it's going to be the beginning. It's the beginning of the offseason. Minicamp, you'll have stories be created.
Yep.
OTAs, you'll have stories, even those are voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously we will have ourselves that time. Because while everything's going on right now, we still have the buoy of playoffs in the NBA, in the NHL, and they've both been very entertaining so far.
They've been so good, Derek. They've been so good,
and we will talk plenty about them. Because there's something that Jeremy and Nate had this morning that I wanted to put a different flavor of spice into. But I know we're not going to start with that.
No, because you want...
I want to make you cry.
To be rude.
Yes. Today, I am promoting positivity today, and now I just turn around and go, I'm going to make my friend cry.
Not just you. I'll join you too.
You're with me.
His numbers takes are weird.
Yes. So...
They're not weird. They're objectively correct.
By the way, we went 4 minutes into the show. He's Zach Jones. I'm Derek Kramer. That's Josh on the board there. I don't know how else to say this other than, man, you got to let people be with the numbers.
Nope.
It's okay.
Nope.
It's okay. As a matter of fact, Jeremy and Nate had you quickly discussing about quarterbacks wearing the number six. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield, thanks to Nate, you know, helping number six's case. And to me, I'm sitting over here going, I don't care what a player wears because if you're bad, well, you're not going to have that number for very long.
I care
immensely.
You're going
to get cut, and then you're going to have to join another team, and you're not going to have that. Or you're awesome, and you make the number look cool because you're that good. And that's where I want to do this. I, luckily, or unluckily, I guess is the way I can phrase this, I am what they call a millennial.
Mm-hmm.
Millennials do have recollection of
the obscure sports player.
No, not the obscure sports player. How dare you with the player I was about to mention. But knowledge of the players that played in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge of them. I don't know how much I ever saw of Carl Mecklenburg of the Denver Broncos, but that was a linebacker wearing the number 77, and it was awesome.
Yeah, you showed me that, and I was like, cool, when was he drafted? Like, I need to know. Made complete sense. Round 12, Derek.
That's okay.
That is a modern day. Now, I no disrespect to the player. He was great. A four-time first-team All-Pro, whole thing.
He should be a Hall of Famer.
But he was given 77 because they're like, you're not making the team. Oh, you're making the team. You want to keep that?
So ready?
Okay,
there is a decision at the end of the day of he wants to keep that. So that's his selection. Bruce Smith, where's the number 78? Go ahead. Do it.
I'm getting there with edge rushers wearing numbers in the 70s. 50s I can get there because of the off-ball linebacker, pass rushing linebacker I can get there. It's not my favorite. I prefer what the Bills rookies did this year with their defensive line picks, which is all picks. They're all numbers in the 90s.
I'm glad that you took a step back.
But I am getting there. Well, because my guy, Kenneth Grant, wore number 77 in Michigan. I was cool with that.
Yeah. So I'm glad that our conversation out there has changed something for you.
Very little. Shuck and Jackson Dart are both wearing number six. By the way, it happened off air. I had to inform Nate of that, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he has mentioned that it takes a little bit away. Now that we've got all these guys wearing number six.
Yeah, because Tyler Shuck doesn't know how to spell his name proper to how it's pronounced.
It's bad. Luther Burden wearing 87. I mean, this is an epidemic.
It's not an epidemic.
No, Luther Burden, I can get on board with that.
Hang on. That's the one I will support. I got Jesus Marshall, the wide receiver from Carolina a few years ago, wearing a number in the 40s. What is happening?
Okay.
What number was it in the 40s? Number was it? Was it 47?
I think 47 or 46.
I love that chaos.
If it's 47, it's fine.
I love that chaos.
47 is a good number.
I don't care what it is. I love the chaos.
No.
I love the chaos.
87, though.
87 is a good wide receiver.
This is the only agent brain I have. Like, if I was a player's agent, I would sit them down and go, my guy, we have got to have kids buy your jersey. You've got to wear something that at least looks cool when they go to school.
If kids buy your jersey, it's because you're popular or good.
No, day one.
It's not because of a number.
I don't want little Timmy asking his dad in the car ride to, you know, wherever they're going to buy their jersey going, Dad, who's a great quarterback that wears six? And the dad with a 1,000-yard stare out on the highway going, playoff Mark Sanchez. That's all I got.
You're going to –
That's it.
You're not even going to include Baker Mayfield.
No.
Really? Ready?
Come on.
If numbers mattered that much – Jared Allen would have the most popular jersey purchase of all time.
Yeah, all right. That one's a good one. I think a lot of
Josh finally got it.
I think a lot of Minnesota Vikings fans have his number.
Yes, because he was good. Not because wearing the number 69 as a pass rusher was a smart idea.
They're aesthetically bad-looking numbers.
Yes.
We and need to acknowledge that. I get good players make numbers, and you'll buy them, what have you.
Good players make unconventional
numbers. Josh Allen with number 17.
Josh Allen with number 17. Before that, it was Phillip Rivers with his horrific-looking throwing motion, which absolutely has hurt his legacy. I will die on that hill.
I'm here for Jake DeLome's legacy, protecting
Jacob
that.
Jacob DeLome.
That was a starting Super Bowl quarterback.
So was Trent Dilfer. So was Kerry Collins.
Well, first of all.
That doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, but also, for a couple of years, he was pretty fun in Carolina.
He had a great receiving core, by the way.
He did. Also, with a receiver that wore the number 87, Musin Muhammad.
I do not like
him. Come at me, bro.
Well, here's the thing, too. There are certain players that can wear the number. I didn't get to say this really on air, but like.
What do you mean there's certain players that can wear the number?
Taller receivers, what have you. Like, they can wear it. Like Eric Decker was what, 6'3"? Like, there is an aesthetic to it. But Luther Burden being 6 foot and a fast guy wearing 87?
God.
Horrific.
No. No,
terrible. See, 87 I can get on board with because like that's Gronk's number. Well, that's Kelsey's number. Like, that's a tight end number.
So, but the thing about it is,
yeah,
before
it's a tight
them,
end number.
It is. It's before them, it's not exclusive to tight ends.
Sure.
Numbers are just that. They're numbers.
But for the past 25 years, there's been a great tight end wearing that number.
And that is nobody's problem. For me, it is still a big old who cares.
The one thing I do...
Because I remember a player like Reggie Wayne sporting 87 and being one of the best receivers to do it. I don't look at his jersey and go, ugh, 87? Gross.
The one thing I do give players credence for is
you
like,
do,
if you
and that's why we're doing this.
If you have a significant reason to have that number, then wear whatever you want.
Here's the problem. I don't necessarily care what a player's reason is, because you said they have to have a reason for it.
Well, for certain numbers, they might.
Certain numbers. All
Luther
numbers.
Luther Burden III wearing number 3 from Missouri. You know, that's kind of nice.
Exactly.
Yeah, but 3 is not available on the Giants, I don't think.
3 is not available on the Giants at the
Russell
moment.
Russell Wilson.
Well, Burden's on Chicago.
Oh, that's right.
Chicago, number 3.
By the way, why did we draw him up to New York?
Update real quick. Terrence Marshall for Philadelphia wearing number 46. He will be cut.
Nope. I want it.
He's going to be cut.
I want this. And the reason, though, is this. Josh says there's a reason that players end up wearing numbers. Sometimes that number is given to you, and then you choose to make it great. Sometimes you choose a number because it does mean something to you. Sometimes you choose a number just out of happenstance of, why did I pick this number? But now I'm sticking with it.
Well, Josh Allen, for that, when he's talking about Y17 when he was at Wyoming, it was the number they gave him. It was a number that was available. He took it. I think he wore 12 at some point. He's worn 15, stuff like that.
I'll use a personal anecdote.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first number that I ever ended up with at 6 years old was the number 49. Not a normal number for a lot of people to pick.
Nah, it's pretty rough.
It's even funnier because I ended up on the offensive line.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
That said, throughout the rest of high school and everything like that, playing in football, I did not have the number 49 because I couldn't.
Yeah.
But then I gravitated back to it, and I didn't remember why. When I started playing hockey, I ended up on the number 49. Why? Because I found the jacket.
Oh.
The six-year-old Derek jacket that has the number 49 on it. I was like, I'm going to pay homage to the first number I ever had playing any sort of organized sports.
Number 3 in Chicago, by the way, is retired.
Yeah, he can't have it.
Who is it?
Bronco Nagurski.
Yeah, no, he can't have
fullback,
that.
Fullback, okay. Linebacker, and tackle from 1930 to 1937.
Yeah, he can't have that.
Unretire it.
No.
I'm talking about the 1930s.
And only for 7 years, by the way.
You also,
well, back then.
I feel like there's going to be a story to this, though.
There's
that
a college football award called the Nagurski Award. So both of you stop it right now.
I was like, there's definitely a story. There has to be a story to
both
this.
Both of you stop it right now.
There's got to be a story to this.
He's Canadian, by the way.
Oh, that's nice.
Canadian fullback.
Heck yeah.
Canadian fullback. There we go. Yeah.
That's the aesthetic that you want wearing number 3.
His name was not Bronco. That was his nickname.
Yeah.
Oh, that's upsetting.
His actual name is...
Your wife is holding your baby. Bronco.
Bronco.
That's the name I'm going with.
Bronislaw?
Bronislaw.
I'm probably butchering that.
That's
I'm really sorry.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Bronislaw, maybe?
Bronislaw.
That's awesome.
I understand where
Bronco comes in.
Bronco came in.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But especially if you're a fullback. Come on.
But again,
that's so
Burden wearing 87. I love the choice. Why? Because he can make it cool.
Now, so on making your own number, I actually did want to get to this because there's been a bit of number hoopla.
Because you had a problem with this last draft.
Oh, yeah. I have a problem with it most drafts. But to
with a Bills player.
Keon Coleman wearing number zero. I still don't like it. But I do want to talk about that point real quick here because there has been some number hoopla, and it's with Abdul Carter, also of the Giants. He picked number 51. And I agree with that wholeheartedly of make your number your own. I joked right there that they should unretire the number. I don't actually mean that. If a number's retired, a number's retired. It's up to the fan, it's up to the team.
It was.
I think the New York Yankees have gone too far with it.
We got Bronislaw out of that discussion, so.
Yeah. But ultimately, if a number's retired, I don't love when players ask for it. I don't even really like that Cam Ward's wearing one in Tennessee for Warren Moon. Mm-hmm. Like, they made this whole show. And if Moon's cool with it, fine. It's not my place to judge. But I didn't like that the moment Cam Ward's, like, brought out, they had Warren Moon walk out with a number one jersey. I was like, this feels staged. I don't know. I don't like this.
That was also a very clearly a hammered down behind-the-scenes discussion.
I just – like, I was feeling uncomfortable for Abdul Carter. You asked for two retired numbers, man.
Yeah.
Like, the Lawrence Taylor one – have some self-awareness, brother. Have some self-awareness to, like, that arguably is still the greatest defensive player of all time and is inarguably the greatest New York Giant of all time.
I was going to say, at
maybe
minimum,
don't
best
come
defensive
in,
player of Giants history.
Yeah. Maybe don't come in day one going, I want that number. And then to that point, don't pivot and go, cool, 56, I totally understand. How about 11?
11 was his college number.
11 is a number that some college programs do this. Penn State is one of them.
Yeah.
They give the best defender 11.
7 at LSU, I know, is typically the best player. I don't know if it's defensive, but it's best player.
USC does this with number one for their wide receivers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're going to miss Zachariah Branch going to Georgia.
So
they're going to miss him.
That's the thing, is that like there are colleges that historically hand these numbers to players for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, do you start college with one thing and then they hand you the number? What do you do? Say no? Like Abdul Carter, you're being given the number 11. What are you going to do? Say no?
Yeah.
Which you could.
You could. College players
but
change the numbers
but
a lot.
But linebacker university, which gives number 11 to players that typically play linebacker, like Penn State used to be known as Linebacker U.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone to hand you 11, that's a big deal. That's why Parsons has it.
Yeah,
in Dallas.
Yeah, I just I hated it. Like, and I like Carter as a prospect. I think he's gonna be very good. I don't.
But
think
it's
he's
a rough look
player.
For him.
It's a bad look because you went. He made a big deal out of asking for 56, and then made a big deal of asking for 11. And I think Phil Simms even said yes, but his family said no. I'm not 100% sure.
Which
on
also,
that.
Come on. Let's not do that.
Yeah, it
like why has a family got to make a big deal about a person
right.
who he's the one that
says yes or no?
Hang on, this is gonna sound really jerkish. Phil Simms is the one that wore it and made the career that he did out of that.
He gets the choice.
Yeah, he should have the say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the family is able to make this decision for him on that. Like. I don't get that one.
Yeah, I don't love it. I just but for me with Carter, he ultimately, by the way, picked 51. Good number. That works for me.
I also think that
combination of the two numbers.
I think that's kind of what I think that's what the plan was.
Because you can't go 16.
No. 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 But it's just like I don't know. Like we haven't had to deal with this a lot, but like I never watched Jim Kelly play. But if Allen had come in, 7th overall pick, high pick, coming and went,
he asked for 12.
I want to wear 12. It would have really rubbed me the wrong way day one. And it's a very small thing, but there is that level of decorum, of self-awareness, of realizing I haven't done squat in the league. Great college career for Abdul Carter, I'm talking. Great college career. Mm-hmm. A lot of great college players that never done anything in the NFL. A lot of Heisman winners that weren't even high draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I am for make the number your own. Don't go for someone else's retire number or anything like that. I'm cool with that. I want it to look good. And I want myself to go there and go, all right, yeah, that looks clean. There's a nice aesthetic to it. I think six for a quarterback is – I think six overall is not a great jersey number. I don't think it looks very good. That's just me. But, yeah, like the Abdul Carter thing, I've been thinking about it a lot. I talked a little bit about it earlier this week on the nightcap. But just – I don't know. It really – it kind of bothered – and I like Carter. But I'm like, you went for two of them?
That is, you need to know the franchise that you've been selected to.
And let's not act like you were surprised the Giants picked you. It kind of been rumbling for a few weeks.
Yes. So, as a matter of fact, you were the betting favorite to be that. But have that awareness once you are selected by the team. Do a quick study. Or have your agent do the quick study. And he comes back to you and goes, dude, you can't have these numbers here. I also do think that sometimes we see sports franchises... Some franchises retire too many numbers.
I mentioned the Yankees. I think the Yankees have gone a little bit too far with that.
There's some quiet chatter about even the Sabres mm-hmm. having done so.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the minute that Aaron Dell showed up
as
a backup goalie and he wanted number 30. And
it was loud.
He very quickly changed to 80.
It lasted a day. I mean, it lasted a day. That was about it.
It might have lasted 12 hours.
Yeah.
So
it was quick.
But that just tells you something. And that number was not even formally retired yet. That was another instance.
Mm-hmm.
That said, there are some teams that retire too many of them. And it's mm-hmm. like you may need to let go of some of the past at this point.
Well, and that's my thing, too. You retire all-time greats, not just in your team, of the sport. Mm-hmm. Like, I am getting there where I think no other Bills player is ever going to wear 17. I think most of us can kind of comfortably say that.
You say that now, but we're having this discussion.
Yeah.
Well, so it's absolutely going to happen.
But it's absolutely
someone's going to ask for it.
But I think it's got to be, like, all-time great done. Like, no Chief is ever going to wear number 15 again.
No. They're going to retire.
They're not. 87, same thing. But both are inarguably all-time great players at their respective positions.
Right.
And that's where I think, like... I know there's Ring of Honors for certain teams and stuff like that, and yes, it's for your specific team, but yeah, I do think there are some circumstances where I'm like, okay, he made like 3 Pro Bowls, like what are we doing here? Come on, let's not do that. There's only so many numbers we can go to, and if we're being honest, sport's gonna go on a lot longer.
The sport is going to go on longer than the people that were of its past.
And, like, that's always been my joke with the Yankees. Like, we're going to get to a point where, like, what are their rosters going to look like? Now, because of how – I mean, they're going to retire 99. You know that's going to happen.
So let's actually reference this back to Bronislaw.
Mm-hmm.
Bronco Nagurski. Number 3 is retired on the Bears.
Yep.
But he played in the 30s. It is because of the impact that Nagurski had on the sport itself.
Yes.
Why that will stay there. But at the same time, a modern fan can challenge. Nobody or very few people were alive to watch him play at this point.
And I'll argue, too, probably when you get to that 100-year mark, which we're getting close to, we're getting close to it, teams will be like, you know what? We'll pave way to the next generation.
And
you know, we'll honor him, but you know, 3 will be offered again.
Yeah, I am of the like that, like, because of that specific player, I was like, hold your phone real quick, because mm-hmm. I knew you were going in on that about Burton. But I had to politely tell you to.
It was like the moment I said, I'm like, there's got to be a story there.
I
could not think of the name.
The minute I heard Nagurski, I'm like, no, they're not getting rid of that. And then we found out his name is Bronislaw.
Bronco. I'm a little disappointed that out of the womb his parents weren't like, that's Bronco right there.
That's Bronco.
That's Bronco. It's so good.
Put it on the birth certificate. Slap it on there.
Bronco.
Bronco.
It's also because I know too many like new parents that have like joked around with the fun names, but then always go to like the safer option.
To reel this back in.
Name your kid Anakin. Have conviction. Let's go.
Name your kid Anakin.
You brought it up. Let's do it.
Please clip that.
And they don't do it. And they don't. And then I'm the bad guy for bringing it up at Thanksgiving, going, not Anakin. Interesting. I'm the bad guy.
I'm the bad guy. No, he is.
Right.
But to reel this back in, you are way too corrective about numbers in the NFL.
No, someone needs to be.
I, for one, love the fact that a punter is wearing 32. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, that's funny.
I love a wide receiver wearing 46.
I'd see.
That's cool.
I could you
imagine,
your
own thing.
Could you imagine him catching a pass?
Yes.
Seton.
Very easily.
You're going to say this.
He got drafted because they think he can catch a pass.
No, this is Terrace Marshall. He's a few years ago with Carolina. This is his last stop, likely.
Then they signed him because they think he can catch a pass.
If he catches a pass for Philadelphia this year, if you watch it, if you see it, I know you.
Philadelphia wearing 46, outwardly, I love it.
Outwardly, you'll be thrilled for him. Internally, you'll be like, that's vile.
No, it's not. I will not think that at all.
I can't. Look at the aesthetic, Derek. It's bad.
The aesthetic is what you make it.
No, there is a healthy balance there.
No.
And
I want Marshall to get like 500 yards.
Our number crisis is way overbalancing it. It's not good.
I want Terrence Marshall to get 500 yards now.
I'll stop watching the sport if that happens.
No, you won't.
I will change careers.
No, you won't.
I can't have
that. No, you won't.
I cannot stand for that.
I will.
Either that or I'm going to become his biggest hater, which is hard for me to say. I liked about LSU.
I want.
I mean, he was the third receiver of that group. But
now I need him to get 500 yards. Like, I need oxygen.
I don't. 803-0550, the number to call. We had a little bit of fun there. We're going to get ready for a Bills rookie minicamp, which is beginning today. It'll run through Saturday. We'll be joined by Sal Capaccio after this quick timeout. But real quick, as we lead into that, the Bills have announced they have signed the following draft picks to four-year contracts. Landon Jackson, Jordan Hancock, Jackson Hawes, Dorian Strong, Chase Lutt, and Caden Prather. We'll get more on the Bills rookies as minicamp will begin today with Sal Capaccio following this quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Before we get to Sal, I do want to remind you to join us in the fight against cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team on Saturday, June 28th. Once you join our team, you will receive an email to pick up your team t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider? You can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal of $10,000 before the ride. Visit WGR550.com for details. Sal Capaccio, now on the Western Hotline, is Bill's rookie.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Key minicamp will get underway today. Sal, good portion of the rookie class is also signed today, so off to a good start. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. Sorry about that. And I will say, just as I'm coming on with you, the Bills have announced their undrafted free agent class. How about that, guys?
There we go.
So we're going to be adding in. We're going to be adding in 12 undrafted free agents, most of which have already been kind of accounted for. Even on my roster that I put out there, I have all these names because of various sourcing. Ryan Talbot does a great job, Syracuse.com. I know Joe Biscaglia had some as well. But anyway, wherever people got them from and sourced, I added them. So I'll cross-reference and make sure, but it looks like 12 players have been signed. We'll get a tryout roster as well. We'll get a rookie minicamp roster, and everything will start here today at 12:30 p.m.
All right, and Sal, what time, you said 12:30 p.m. is when practice is going to get underway?
Yes, and then we'll hear from rookies after practice, more of an informal setting, like, you know, in the field house, you know, talk to them. They come off the field like we do after a Bills practice. I'm here in the media room right now. We're not going to have anything official in here today, like at podium. This is going to be like, hey, they're on the field. We watch them. Then afterwards, you know, you got to catch up with them and say, hey, we're talking to this guy in a scrum or that guy. And, you know, we hear from them. For the first time.
You know, Sal, I was listening back to you and Matt Beauvais's conversation yesterday with Sean McDermott on Always Game Day in Buffalo. And the last year and a half of this kind of change in, I'd almost say, the vibe around McDermott. He's you know, much more fun. It kind of seems like he's cracking more jokes. There was an intensity to him I do want to get to, because the one answer, I know Matt's tweeted out and it's kind of made the runs. I want to get to that. But first, I also really enjoyed listening to him talk about like what they look for in rookie minicamp. And one of those kind of was like just sort of like the informal, like maybe more of like a comfortable setting, getting to know them. It's not here on a visit. They're actually here now and stuff like that. It was kind of cool because me and Derek were talking about it. You know, a rookie minicamp doesn't always get a lot of the the big headlines, really, unless you have a rookie quarterback. But it is still important.
Oh, my goodness. It's, you know, there's an old saying, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, that's the first time these guys are on the field today in front of their coaches with their teammates, most of them all, you know, rookies or maybe select second-year players who haven't had as much time in the league, so they're eligible. This is the first time they're going to have to interact with them, to be on the field with them, for people to see what they're like, how they interact with them, what their personality is, and then talent-wise, right? And like I say all the time, guys aren't going to make the team or not make the team today. It is possible you could get a guy out there and like, okay, he's out of shape and, you know, he didn't take this seriously as you're cutting him. But, you know, what they show on the field today isn't going to make or break them and their chances for the 2025 Buffalo Bills. What it does do, though, is it gives the coaches an understanding of kind of where they need to fit in as they go through their offseason program, what some of the kind of nuances for this particular player are, both on the field and personality wise, right? I thought that was an interesting point from Sean during this podcast you referenced that Matt and I did, which is, you know, you have to kind of learn about each player, and everybody's going to be a little bit different. You know, you can't, not one size doesn't always fit all. Yes, you have these overarching rules and expectations from a football team and organizational standpoint, but as I brought up to Sean in that interview, you have guys like last year is a great example. Keon Coleman came here as a 20-year-old rookie, and then Ray Davis was 25 years old as a rookie, right? I mean, they're at different stages of their life. Landon Jackson's married already, guys. He's 22. He's married. Right? Like, does that matter to, is it a really big difference on how they get treated? No, not necessarily. But I think, you know, you're going to understand them from a humanistic level. And that's just as important for the coaches over the next few days than it is seeing them on the field.
Man, that is a very quick reminder of life is a marathon, not a sprint, with how different it can be. Sal, though, from your perspective, what do you watch for in these 2 days? Because I think it obviously can depend on really what position you're looking at, how early these guys were drafted, and what have you.
Yeah, good question. I think everybody's different in the media, what they're maybe looking for. And I'm sure some media is going to show up today and say, I just want to focus on Max Harrison and then talk to him and do a story on him, right? Mm-hmm. That could happen. That's not – no. My personal approach is always I want to see who's jumping off the page to me a little bit, if that makes sense, right? Like I want to go and see if there's someone that I go, okay, like I notice that guy. Now, it could be for a good or bad reason, but generally looking for a good reason, and it doesn't mean that it's going to happen necessarily later on. You know, do you guys remember the days of like a – who was the – oh, shoot. Okay, so Justin Shorter was one of these guys, I think, but who was the Perino's in the room. Matt, who's the wide receiver every year that looked great in minicamp? What? Duke did. It was Duke Williams, but there was another guy. Desmond, was it? Oh my gosh. I can't think of his name.
Hang on.
And every year we're like, what?
There was a couple. Brandon Riley was one of those names that was recycled
Brandon Riley,
in there.
But that was more of a, Brandon Riley was good like during like the training camp.
Yep.
What? Kumro was one too, but no, he made the team. Okay,
I'm blanking on his name. Christian Wade was a preseason hero.
No, I'm talking. There was a wide receiver that was for like 3 straight years, like this guy looked great, and then he put the pads on and nothing happened, right? So, anyway, my point is like that happens out here where you see a guy and you're like, oh my God, look at that guy. He looks great. And then it just doesn't happen and mm-hmm. it doesn't work out for him. I'm looking for that. The reverse could be true, though. I remember coming here and literally like day one, I'm like, okay, Ron Darby is different. He's mm-hmm, just different. Mm-hmm. He's better than everybody out here.
He was direct,
right? Like
Rogers.
The way he moves his hips, right? No, the way he moves his hips, those kind of things. Sammy Watkins was just different. I actually remember Tre'Davious White was this guy, like where it just, you knew by watching him, he was just kind of better and different than everybody else. I'm going to get that player because it's really bothering me now.
It's Derrick Rogers.
No, it wasn't Derrick Rogers.
He was probably
Derrick Rogers
one of them
was
too.
A guy like that, but
yeah.
Okay, hold on. There was a guy, and I'm gonna get it for you because you know why? Because
it's figuratively killing all of us.
Probably, yeah. Hold on, I'm gonna go back to you know what? Because he was drafted before this regime. Desmond Lewis.
Desmond Lewis. Oh my God.
I haven't thought about that name in years.
We just went through like
Desmond Lewis every year. Drafted in 2015. Desmond Lewis, 6'4", 214, right? This guy was taller. Every year for like 3 straight years, at least 2, he showed up and you're like, ooh, dude, like he looks like he's a stud. Look at this guy in shorts. And it just never translated. He literally has played 2 games in the NFL.
Yeah, you gave me the measurements. I'm like, yeah he would be the guy that would pop off.
That's actually kind of wild.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
I went through 3 different guys and it was figuratively killing all of us. I'm glad that we got there, though.
Yeah, but anyway, that's a great example of how you can kind of go out there and these guys look really great in shorts, but what happens when the pads come on? But the opposite, like I said, you could be true where you look at a guy and you're like, okay. And how about the story Sean McDermott shared with us on this podcast we're mm-hmm. talking about, which is I asked him, was there ever a guy like that for him? He actually shared a really good story about Luke Kuechly and how the first mm-hmm. practice they ever had with Luke Kuechly, he's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, he doesn't look like – he was watching him out of the corner of his eye. He wasn't that impressive, basically. Like, you know, you have to go and listen to how Sean described it. And he's like, okay, like really wasn't like, okay, are we like, this is the guy we took number one. And then they go to 11 on 11 and he just was so good compared to everybody. And he's like, okay, now I see what happened here.
There's nothing I love more. GM, gamer, coach, yeah. what have you. Well, pure gamer, I love when you don't often get that kind of story from a coach where they don't immediately like it's always a glowing review. And it's right. No hate to coaches. I get it. You want to be, you know, sort of a diplomat in that sense. But I love that he kind of acknowledged that initially he didn't love Kuechly, but it was once he got to 11-11, they were playing real football. I was like, okay, never mind. Wrong on that. So one guy I'm interested in, and I think we talked about this during draft coverage, really, it's all of the cornerbacks. I think this team has done an incredible job in the late rounds of finding NFL talent. And I look at a guy like Dorian Strong, who on that Saturday when he was drafted, the three of us, me, Derek, and Nate, were all kind of like, oh, that was a guy we thought could have been available in the fourth round. I'd be interested to see kind of what he looks like.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good stories like that, and a lot of guys you could pick out. He's one of them for sure. I mean, he's got he looks the part, right? When you think about Dorian Strong, looks like a guy who can fit in here and play at the NFL level. Let's look at the cornerback depth chart, though. Like, what are his chances of actually being on this team? I think they're good to be on the team because of where he was drafted, but there's no guarantees there. And then what about him actually, you know, suiting up, getting a jersey on game day, contributing? I mean, I think corner is going to be maybe the most fun position to watch during training camp. And it's going to start out here, by the way. Max Hairston, Jordan Hancock, Dorian Strong, Daryl Porter Jr. as a undrafted free agent. Even, I don't know, but like guys like Daquan Hardy and Tecori Couch, like it's possible. Like there's certain guys, I don't know if they'd be eligible for this, but sometimes guys that are on the practice squad last year are eligible in their second year to come to rookie minicamp. The point is, this is going to be a nice group to kind of watch as these guys go forward. And he's certainly one of them at the quarterback position.
Zach mentioned Strong, and I look at Hancock, and this will be the first chance that the Bills would be able to get various looks from him in like the 7-on-7, sort of a non-contact sort of scenario. Where would they put Hancock? Will they put him in the slot? Will they put him at safety? Will they put him outside? This will be the first chance that a very versatile piece like Jordan Hancock will have the opportunity to show where he might end up most comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. And I think those things start now, obviously, Derek. And, you know, they're not going to end today, right? Like, you put a guy somewhere. I remember, in fact, you know what's a good example of this is the linebackers over the last few years, right? I remember when, speaking of a Dorian Williams, when he came in and talk was, okay, he's going to play middle linebacker. And then, like, no, he actually fits more on the weak side, right? I mean, like, there's all these kinds of things. Beale Inspector, same thing. Even Terrell Bernard, what was his role? Weak or the middle, you know? He actually, remember, Terrell Bernard's first start in the NFL was in place of Matt Milano as will linebacker against the Jets. And then what happened? He wound up moving the next year to being the main, you know, middle linebacker, obviously, and that's where he is now. But you're right. Like, this is the time period where you kind of start to get that. But again, tomorrow, it's acclimating. It's getting the guys in. It's kind of just getting a feel for them, watching them run through drills, interaction. All of that stuff will get sorted out. I think a lot of us, we're all so thirsty for it. We want to put the cart before the horse. We want to envision it. We want to talk about who's making the 53. The Bills are going to have a process here, and this is May, right? We're at May 9th. They have rookie minicamp. They have a whole bunch more OTAs. They have mandatory minicamp. They have all of training camp before any of that actually gets sorted out. But today's the first day to kind of at least get a look at them.
Like life, it is a marathon, not a sprint. We will get there.
Yes.
But let's all enjoy the changing of the weather. Sal, I'm excited to go golfing this weekend. I just wanted to say it. There's nothing else there. I just want to say it. But Sal, real quick, last
thing. I am too. I'm actually, I think I'm playing with Bulldog tomorrow morning, early tomorrow morning.
There we go. It's everybody. I'm loving it.
I just don't know how to golf.
We'll get you there. We'll get you there. Don't worry.
Will we?
I mean, we'll get you there. Sal, last thing for me. Because I brought it up right at the start of the conversation. There was an answer from McDermott yesterday during your interview with him and Matt Bove, where he was talking about a story that he was meeting with a fan and eventually came to the fan kind of telling him that he feels like the Bills maybe are okay to be second best or second place. There is a fire that I think a lot of fans have seen from McDermott that just – I know there's this up-and-down feeling about him. I know there's this feeling of maybe have they – ran this race too long. Do they need to change out the car? Whatever, what have you. There is a fire to that man that it almost feels like he is having to fight not exploding and getting amped up and fired up and like has to like keep his decorum. Is that kind of how you felt talking to him yesterday?
Yeah, he's just certainly a passionate guy. I think we've always all seen that, right? You know, and I think that what's happened here over the last probably a year or so, a little over a year now, it seems like, going into last year, I think there's a lot of recognition that Sean's been a lot more open. Now, that's kind of well-documented, right? Doing snow angels on the field after a game.
Right.
And, you know, just kind of like all of that kind of stuff. And I think that he looks so intense, and he is so intense about football. And I think that's been kind of his identity for so many fans for so long that they haven't been able to, because he hasn't really allowed it as much, to see the kind of true person he is. He's passionate about life and the city of Buffalo and what the Bills mean to the Buffalo, right? He really is. And I think when you're around him, you get that sense. That story yesterday he related is absolutely one of them. What he's passionate about is not just living here and being a part of this community, but what the team means, what the organization means to the community. And that story was a great reflection of it and how, you know, he didn't take it from a standpoint of he was mad at the guy, right?
Like, yeah.
he was mad. The guy said, "Oh, I get the feeling that Buffalo is the Bills are good with being number two." He could have I'm sure it irked him. It bothered him. You could tell on his face. Go watch it. But what he took it from was a standpoint of, okay, I want to win for that guy because I want to show him and prove him that's not the case, right? That's what was interesting to me about the end of that story.
Yeah, I've gotten there. Obviously covering the team, I've somewhat distanced myself as a fan to just, be able to cover them. But I have gotten there where I want to see the Bills win a Super Bowl. Of course for the fans, of course for my family, for me, the whole thing. But, Sean McDermott has kind of gotten up there as a guy I want to be able to see lift the trophy, because I can just imagine the weight that would be lifted off his shoulders, and Allen's, of course. He's absolutely gotten up there. I want to see him win one, because you can see the passion that he has for the sport, for the city, of course.
We talk a lot about who's the next athlete that needs to win one, and Josh is right at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. It's Josh, Lamar, I think Connor McDavid, right? They're all right there, right? You want to talk about guys. What about coaches? Sean McDermott's at the top of that list, too. He's near it, at least, right? What coaches haven't won one that you say, okay, this guy needs to win a championship, right? He hasn't done that yet. And Sean McDermott's right there with several other coaches. If you want to go through the list or whatever, I don't know, who you're going to say? Kyle Shanahan, maybe, right? He's been to a Super Bowl, been to a couple now.
Yeah.
So there are other coaches there on that list. He was hired the same year as Sean, actually. Go through other sports. Lindy Ruff, right here in Buffalo, right? That's certainly one of them in all of sports that would fall into that category. So, I think that's the case. Can I throw Aaron Boone in there too as a Yankee fan?
I was gonna throw Judge in there for next athlete to win. So you can throw Boone in there. That's fine.
Throw Judge in there too. You're right about that, no doubt.
All right, Sal. Thanks for jumping on with us. Enjoy practice. We'll be hearing from you later today.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you.
All right, Sal. Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline as coverage of Bills rookie minicamp on WGR is presented by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys, and brought to you in part by Window Nation, the perfect fit for your home and wallet.
All right. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. 803-0550, the number to call. We're open the rest of the morning to afternoon leading into Sabres Live at 12 o'clock. You want to talk rookies, who you're most excited to hear about?
Love. Do you have another random Bills preseason receiver that we missed?
Austin Prohl. Although, hearing what Sal said about him, I'm like, oh yeah, Prohl would not have fit that at all. He was the prototypical slot guy, catches everything, gets open. But the moment you put him with a bunch of other people, you're like, eh.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So many preseason.
There were so many
heroes.
Names. I went through three different ones, and so I was like, no, not that guy, not that guy, not.
And then, it was you.
I do love
realize,
the three
like,
of
oh
us were
goodness.
Like, the three of us were like, is this figuratively killing all of us right now?
I was getting to a point. I'm like, it's just an amalgamation of people. It's just clumped together.
The preseason wide receivers are actually the friends we made along the way.
Yep. 803-0550 again, the number to call. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Quick segment here before our next timeout. I did want to bring up a fun realization in the break.
I asked, I made a pot shot of it. I don't know if people really wanted to flock in to make calls about random Bills preseason wide receivers, but
Rob in Toronto called in. Josh let us know. He mentioned the name Rod Streeter, a wide receiver from Allen's rookie year. When I heard the name Rod Streeter, I had a vivid flashback.
You came alive.
Love was in my eyes. I remember, and it's Streeter's a part of the play, but I vividly remembered Allen's rookie year. It's a preseason game in Cleveland, and it's second or third down. They're in the red zone, and it's Allen has to dance around in the pocket before firing a touchdown, and it's Rod Streeter who catches the pass. I'm fairly certain that's all he did, but I remember that play.
You work too many of these games.
I wasn't working then.
Really?
I was in college still.
Oh, okay. That's why you remember.
Yeah, which is even worse.
That's worse, yes.
Is that I remember that game.
You actually watched it.
Oh, man. I have a few
with
games.
Intention and remember, you have a core memory about Rod Streeter.
You know what's funny? So Allen's rookie year, I remember the first pass he had in the preseason, which was he just uncorked one, went out of bounds. I don't remember who he played against. I remember this game. I'm going to call it the Rod Streeter game.
The Rod Streeter game.
And then I remember his second year, 2019, a preseason game against Carolina. I'm sitting there at a local wing restaurant with my buddy Joe. We're watching the game, and it was the Bills opened up with 15 straight passes. It ultimately was foreshadowing for what they would do later to start the year. But I remember, and we're both That's all we needed to see. We're ready to go.
All right, so we clearly need to get him off of whatever the heck this is. Like, Robin Toronto, thank you for bringing up that name. I also feel I don't know if I should take credit or take blame on that. That we had a Rod Streeter segment, but in 2025. But here we are. So it's kind of my fault, and I guess that's okay. So for my penance on that, I'm going to make sure to let you all know that we have your ticket to 8 amazing golf experiences with the WGR VIP golf card. For just one low price of $129, you can unlock a season of golfing adventures, including Diamond Hawk, Shamrock Hills, Attica's 10th Hole and Golf Course, Bobolink, and Golf Dojo. Your WGR VIP golf card also hooks you up with a free box of premium Vero X1 golf balls in case you shank a couple of swings. That'll always happen to you. And those will come from Encore Golf. You'll also be able to score deals at Rick Zurak Golf Warehouse on transit in Bowmansville. A portion of your proceeds will benefit PGA Hope. Get all the details and purchase your WGR VIP golf card today at getmyperks.com. We'll transition into the second hour talking about postseason. Instead of games that don't literally matter, we're going to go to the games that matter the most. The NHL and the NBA playoffs have been awesome, and we'll talk a lot more about that coming up on the other side on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt's on the board. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
We are vibing here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach is just boogieing over there. That's Zach
Jones. I watched
Jones.
The GTA 6 trailer.
That's
like
Zach Jones.
Times.
I'm Derek Kramer. We're in for sale for today. And again, just looks so nice out there that the energy we wanted to put into it is let's have ourselves a great weekend. And let's set the tone, you know? And you got to complaining about numbers, and I'm like, nah, let's put you down.
I had a good time about it.
We did have fun
with
it.
I had a very good time.
We had fun with it. And I hope you've been having fun with us so far as well. You know what else has been bleeping fun? Watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. I, as someone that hated the matchup 2 years ago between Florida and Vegas, am relishing that these two teams are currently getting the brakes beaten off of them. Both down 2-0 in their series.
Yeah, they're not having great times.
To Toronto, of all teams, and Edmonton, respectively. I am so excited that Vegas is again complaining about a blatant cross-check.
It's kind of fun.
It's so fun.
I'm sorry,
Golden Child. You don't get everything when you cross-check somebody in the face. I'm sorry that you can't do that. Also, what was the guy even... What was Nicolas Roy even thinking?
Yeah.
If he's even trying to say I was trying to bat the puck, you know what's an easier way to do that? Not with a cross-check. Like...
I have enjoyed, and I still do,
so dumb.
The villain era of Golden State, and the Golden Knights. Like, I really enjoyed it, but there is something to like. But I want to watch them lose in like embarrassing fashion. Now they're not getting blown out by Edmonton. Last night was an overtime winner, what have you. But like even like for me, like I don't really have any ill will anymore towards Jack Eichel. I've moved on. Like it's been enough time. But watching a Vegas player get fooled on an overtime winner was enjoyable. It has become enjoyable. But overall, the NHL playoffs, and we'll get to the NBA as well, they've just been great games. The series might be 2-0, but they're competitive to the end, and you're watching teams like Edmonton have to scrape and claw to get to their 2-0 series lead. Toronto struggled with Ottawa in round one. It looked like normal Toronto of, guys, you really can't put them away. And now, here they are against Florida, a team that I would imagine, if we may be outright said it, we expected Florida to beat them. Just it's Toronto. This is what's going to happen. They didn't look great against Ottawa.
That said, Florida's got the next two at home, so let's see what really happens here.
Let's see.
It could even up very realistically.
But you even for Toronto. I mean, we've talked a lot of Mitch Marner, obviously with him hitting the open market.
If you come away with one win though, in the next two,
yeah,
you feel a lot better about 3-1.
Oh yeah,
than you would about 2-2.
Yeah, it's heading back home. It's the same thing with the Knicks right now. You got two in Boston. You just get one in New York to make it 3-1. You feel great. But like for Toronto, it's guys like Mitch Marner.
Yep.
Who, I mean, we talked about his playoff stats. They were awful. And he was not a good playoff player. And now he's really putting it together. Is he all world? No. But he's performing.
Yep.
He's performing really well. Matthews seems to be the only one that still kind of just can't do it. But
which is
they look really,
really
good. And it's just there's so many good series going on right now. Tonight, I'm very excited for Dallas-Winnipeg, game two tonight. Mm-hmm. That one's going to be fun. Game three, Toronto and Florida's tonight at 7. Jets-Stars is 9:30.
You mentioned someone that's had playoff struggles. Connor Hellebuck. Hellebuck needs to get things in order if Winnipeg is going to go on a deeper run here, because you could get away with it against the Blues. You're not getting away with it against, apparently, the newest god of hockey,
by the
Mikko Rantanen.
Hellebuck barely got away with it.
Yeah.
Against the Blues. And yeah, Mikko Rantanen, what is it, two straight hat tricks?
I mean, in back-to-back games.
What an addition for the Stars.
It is kind of nasty to see how he got traded twice and both times were for sizable returns.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still proving it all right. Like, hey, I want that $14 million a year. Carolina's not going to be able to do this, and they're going to ship him off. Dallas is going to do it.
He has not had under 3 points in the last four games.
I don't understand what's up with him, but it is great for Dallas in their run, which disgusts me because I hate them as a franchise still. Jeremy and Nate said something this morning that was very interesting about a team comparable, a hockey comparable for the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned Carolina.
Okay.
And Jeremy did say, prefaced it by saying, it's gross for me to say this.
Yeah.
Like, I feel gross saying it. And I do like that. I respect that because I would feel the same way. I'm going to give a different take to it. So he says that Carolina, so the Hurricanes, are kind of the NHL equivalent of the Bills. They make a deep run into their own conference, but they never get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it's Toronto. The Leafs and the Bills have very similar parallels because they cannot get themselves out of a certain spot. And they have a superstar that is recognizable across all NHL circles. And Austin Matthews. So it's interesting. And I also think that outside of a natural hatred that some Sabres fans would harbor towards Toronto,
mm-hmm.
I am really going to wonder if Toronto makes a Stanley Cup, just how many eyes are going to be on that series.
I was going to ask that. How good of a story do you think it is for the NHL if, say, Toronto, I'm not even saying wins the cup, but makes the cup final?
First of all, that is something exclusive to their franchise. They will have already done something they've never done in their entire franchise's history. And you know what that is? If they get to the Stanley Cup, they will have had to have won three playoff series for the first time ever.
I think we talked about that with, I want to say, Matt Larkin a few weeks ago.
Yeah, ever. They have never, as a franchise, won more than two playoff series. And before 19—when was the expansion? But they've never had to.
Mm-hmm.
When they won their cups, they only had to win two series to do so.
Yeah.
The minute it got to three or four, they've not even won three. And I'm very open and receptive to the idea of them making the cup final. And the reason is, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
I do not need to see the Florida Panthers and Sam Bennett scum his way to not getting called for anything. I don't need Matthew Tkachuk turtling the minute that he goes ahead and punches someone in the kidney. I don't need to see
the Florida Panthers continue their usual brand of garbage and make it to another Stanley Cup final. I do not need that in my life anymore. I don't need to see the Vegas Golden Knights whine and complain and then celebrate like they don't, like they've known hardship when they've missed the playoffs one time in their entire lives.
And they regularly make deep playoff runs.
Like they regularly make deep playoff runs.
It's not even like you make the playoffs losing round
one. And then the minute that they don't, they complain about the referees. Welcome to existing in sports, you newbies.
Well, I mean, yeah, they are.
I don't need.
Still kind of a fresh face, yeah.
Hell, I don't need the Dallas Stars right now, honestly. Give me Winnipeg.
I mean, you know how I feel about Winnipeg. Like, yes. I always kind of pick a team that I kind of want to follow. Winnipeg for the last few years, I love the look of their home arena for the playoffs.
Edmonton's so cool. My exception, I think, because, you know, obviously last year's Western Conference champions, they almost win the Stanley Cup, and you want to see if Connor McDavid can help will his team to a Stanley Cup and a championship. And you can tell how impactful he truly is, not just on the ice, but with his teammates, because that McDavid to Draisaitl pass, Draisaitl scores the overtime winner last night. And the team goes off into two little celebration pools at first. One for the actual goal scorer, who teams usually are supposed to flood, in Draisaitl. But half of them end up at the boards over near Connor on the other side.
It is funny to watch.
It's funny.
It is really funny to watch.
He absolutely made poor Jack... I can't believe I'm saying it like this. Poor Jack Eichel got shook by full-speed Connor McDavid.
That could have been
so
any,
bad.
That could have been any Vegas player. I would have laughed. That was so much fun.
So bad that I say, poor Jack Eichel.
Oh man, so much fun.
Mostly because, man, that's just, nobody's stopping him. The only player that's probably stopping him is Prime Scott Stevens, and he does it illegally.
Yeah, did it. I mean,
like, the elbow is going to the head of McDavid, and like that's the only way you're defending it. But there's a celebration. One with Draisaitl, one with McDavid. On the other ends of the ice, and then it's Draisaitl's group that has to congregate on the other side.
Yeah,
it's not flooding toward Draisaitl.
That's
it's
my favorite part. Flooding to McDavid. Is that they're like, oh, we got to go over there. It's like, wait, what?
Because he made such a special play, but he doesn't score the goal. So that, like, it was a little weird thing. But that tells you the respect that he has of his team.
I mean, he should have that kind
he
of
He should have that respect, obviously. But, like, to see something so funny, not necessarily like a bad unconventional, but like, you know, it's weird. It's worth pointing out.
I think what's also worth pointing out, so you bring up that goal. Edmonton scored 5 last night. That's the only goal Leon and McDavid are a part of. And so, like, there's always something interesting to watch with the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, last year was not their depth.
With these guys is because, like you said, last year it was McDavid and Draisaitl having historic playoff runs and willing that team into the Stanley Cup Finals and then willing them into a Game 7. This year, I don't want to, you know, say that, oh my gosh, look at the depth. But it is something to bring up that, like, in a series with a Vegas team, yes, ultimately they are part of the win, but to get that game to overtime, Connor and Draisaitl ultimately don't do anything on the score sheet. I don't want to say they didn't do anything, but they don't do anything on the score sheet. And that is just something you don't often see with these Oiler teams. It's just not. Now, you brought up Cameron Hellebuck as well. I heard Owen on the morning show bringing up the idea that Hellebuck changed his pads. And that was like this like stunning thing to do, which it, as somebody that was a little bit of a superstitious athlete, I also didn't have a ton of equipment necessarily to like change out goalies. I know that's the thing.
Pads also could be how you feel. Like
yeah.
You feel.
But I'm like, I feel like Hellebuck had to do anything. He had to do just something.
You got to do something.
Winnipeg is a very, very good team, but there's a reason he is one of the 3 finalists for the Hart Trophy. He is kind of the reason why they're here, why they won their first ever President's Trophy. And he's got to do something.
He's got to do something in this postseason.
And that's a big reason why like I'm so fascinated by tonight's game.
By the way, just to circle back to McDavid real quick, just how unconscious last year's postseason run was for him with that 42 points. He's doing his standard affair now.
Yeah.
2 goals, 12 assists, 14 points in 8 games.
So absurd.
And yet that's nothing doesn't hold a candle to last year's performance.
Last year was special. That's one of my favorite sports memories of the last like 5-6 years was watching Edmonton come alive to force a game seven. That was a blast. I couldn't wait for game seven. It was a heartbreaking end to watch Edmonton have no legs left with the seconds ticking down. It was just like, this is heartbreaking. Like, this is mm-hmm. hard to watch. But yeah, for Winnipeg especially, Hellebuck, you want him to get right. You want him to just have like a great game. Just to make you feel like he can do it. Because right now, it almost feels like Winnipeg has to win in spite of him, which as Sabres fans, we know that's hard to do, to win in spite of a bad goalie.
Yeah.
And then the other big playoff story, at least for me, has been Mikko Rantanen for Dallas. I've mentioned the last 4 games, he has not had under 3 points. The man is on a warpath, it feels like.
For me, the other playoff story I want to really be invested in here is about Washington and how they're going to keep going, if they're going to keep going.
Yeah, funny enough, it's a series I haven't – I watched last night's game, but it's a series – while I was talking about it a lot before the playoffs started, I'm like, ooh, like Ovechkin, like are we going to have like another storybook moment for him? It's like maybe the least interested I've been in the series for
a
round two.
It's the least interesting series, I think.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Like, cause I feel bad that I'm not interested because I was paying attention to Washington a lot going in, but then once they got to round two, I was like, okay. You guys have fun. I'm more excited about these guys over here.
It's because there are star players that have storylines to get through.
Yeah.
The Oilers. Can McDavid and Draisaitl get there again and try to one up what they did last year, which is win that cup that just eluded them. The Jets. Can Connor Hellebuck stop pulling this playoff Kershaw run that he's on? Please.
It's rough, man.
Toronto. Can they actually win a second series? And that's more about a team and its core than about like any one star player. And then Washington is a team that a lot of people have written off.
People were ready to write them off before the playoffs even got started.
Yeah, it was kind of you'll beat Montreal, but that's pretty much as far as they're going to go. They tie up the series last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the only series that has the series even. There's only been one game played between the Jets and Stars, but I digress. I'm thoroughly enjoying that there are different stories for the most part this year right now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, your two conference champions and cup finalists from last year are still very much, they're here.
Mm-hmm.
They're also down 2-0. And those are, one of them is down 2-0. The other's up 2-0. But it still seems like there are different storylines that make things better. And for me, honestly, it's you get the Panthers. There are too many teams in this bracket that I hate. There's one in each series.
I was going to say, yeah, you're really not enjoying some of these teams. Like you got a select few you like.
No. The haterade is strong because within these series in the second round, there is a team in every series that I cannot stand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right now, with Toronto and Florida, it's not the Leafs. It's the Panthers. I have a legitimate problem with them.
Yeah. I love Sam Bennett, though. I want him on the Sabres so bad.
At this point, I don't want to deal with the headache.
He's exactly who they need.
He is exactly who they need, but I don't want to deal with the headache of Sam Bennett in particular.
I'll deal with it.
Carolina.
Yeah.
Still dirty.
Still dirty.
Still gross.
You know what, too, though?
Let it go. No.
I also imagine, though, there's a lot of NFL fans that feel the same way. Either get it done or go away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm at the go away, and it doesn't help either that there was already past feelings towards that. But I guarantee there's probably, like, an AFC South fan that's like, I'm so done with the Bills.
Yeah,
like,
or
I'm
the
so,
Ravens.
I'm,
at this point,
I'm
yeah.
so done with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the reason the Chiefs are always there because they can't get it done. There's probably that feeling about Carolina of like, oh, my gosh, come on. Like, figure it out.
Can you actually do this? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Vegas.
Yep.
Because every time they don't make a deep playoff run, they go crying. Well, like, it's the worst thing that's happened to them. And mostly because it probably is, actually, yes. It's actually the worst thing that's happened to their franchise. The world's smallest violins play everywhere.
Oh, man.
And then Dallas. Let it go? No.
I
want to like Dallas.
Yeah.
But I also think the uniforms are a huge downgrade from what they had.
I like the uniforms. They are a super likable team.
I guess it's the logo.
If it weren't for the history, I would really like the Stars.
Yes, I want to like the Stars because Jason Robertson is a great player.
I love Ottinger.
Ottinger is a fantastic goalie.
I really like him. He has put Dallas on his back a number of times in the playoffs, so it's not really the Hellebuck situation. Mikko Rantanen, that's just fun. He leads the playoffs in scoring so far.
It is getting absurd with Rantanen right now. And
they're a good team. They're just a really good, fun watch.
But yeah, like there's just too much about the Stars that I can't let go of, and that's a me problem.
It's fair.
But also, having a team to hate in every series does put a little bit more passion into it.
It puts a little juice into it, and on that...
But with how annoying Florida's been that I'm favoring Toronto over you...
Oh, right, yeah. It has to get to a certain level.
Yeah, it's the disdain of, like... He's not on this team anymore, but, like, Nick Cousins for the last 2 years with Florida was one of the worst people. Oh, by the way, I mentioned Bennett and Tkachuk. They added Marchand. That's a player I like cheering for, right?
I forgot about Marchand until you mentioned that. I haven't really thought about him at all.
That's because it feels wrong that he's in Florida and not Boston.
He's Boston through and
through. He is Boston through and through, and he's playing in Florida because the Bruins decided, let's make Florida more unlikable.
Yeah. On Boston, I want to hit this real quick before we take our next time out.
The hell out of here.
Because I've also enjoyed the NBA playoffs. I've been bouncing back and forth every night to a Stanley Cup playoff game, an NBA playoff game. I think I've enjoyed the NBA playoffs more, but I think it's because I have more players that I like rooting for. Like for me, I am somebody, I have to have somewhat of a rooting interest in a sports team to get behind them. I can't just like them because their uniforms are cool or like, oh, I hate this team, so I'm going to go with them. I can't. Like for me, like Pacers-Cleveland, I'll watch. It's exciting. I don't really have a rooting interest. Whoever wins, wins.
And yet, right now, that's turning into an interesting story.
It's an absolutely interesting story. With how injured Cleveland is, can they pull it together, or has Indiana already put them in a hole, which
down 2-0,
history would tell you they have. The other 2-0 series, and the rooting interest I have, is New York. I'm a Knicks fan in the sense of I can watch their games fairly easy on TV. It's never been that hard. I don't hate the organization. They've never been that New York team that I'm like, ugh, like enough. I know they get talked a lot about on TV, but they've got a pretty rough history as well of just like bad playoff series, huge misses, kicked around a lot. The owner's a bit of a nightmare. But also, to those that have listened to me a lot, I'm a massive college basketball fan, particularly the Big East. Mm-hmm. Again, very easy for me to watch when I was growing up, still is, and so that I kind of fell in love with the league. And while I was never a Villanova fan, I am somebody, if my favorite team in the Big East is out, I will then root for the Big East teams to go far. Nova went far a lot, and I knew a lot of these players, and I liked a lot of these players. And to watch guys like Jalen Brunson ascend to a stardom in New York that has led him to have one of his nicknames being the King of New York, and for there to be a genuine feeling that he might be, even outside of New York, one of the most beloved players in his sport, which is sometimes strange because of the New York, I guess, kind of aura about them. You usually don't like them unless you're a fan of them. They're such a scrappy, fun team. There is that Villanova way. They play defense. They'll take charges. They're going to drive in to score. Yeah, they shoot threes, yes, and they do it very well, but they're going to drive in. They're going to play defense. And I listened to Colin Cowherd and Nick Wright talk yesterday on Colin Cowherd's podcast, and I think he said it on his show. Colin Cowherd said it on his show as well. It was kind of fun to see like the math nerd that is the Boston Celtics get beat up a little bit. You know, for lack of a better kind of way to put it, you know, they're the analytical till we die kind of vibe of a team of we're just going to keep chucking up threes. It eventually will work for us. We're talented. It's going to work. And for two games, it hasn't. And it's been fun to watch them go 25 of 100 from three. And there is also a point, too, of watching, a good team typically ends up becoming a bully. You know, every AFC East fan base would say right now the Buffalo Bills are the bully. That's what happens. But it is funny to watch an arrogant bully get embarrassed. It is for everybody. Yeah.
How great it was for the Bills to take the division.
Yes,
oh, my
exactly.
God. Across the league.
And the Celtics have that aura already about them. And this team and me and Joe DiBiase got into it with some listeners, a few days ago about Tatum. Like, he's a weaker superstar. He's a very good player, no doubt. But he shies away from the big moments. And he loves to shoot threes. Even if, like, dude, you're 6'8", drive in. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a mismatch there. And it's just, that's been a lot of fun. I wish Steph Curry wasn't hurt for the Warriors because last night's game should have been a lot closer between them and Minnesota. I like Anthony Edwards. Wish he would score more. Yeah. That the last three games for him has been kind of tough, but defensively he's still a great player. He's a very old school player. I think there, and I've been meaning to say this, there is a generation of fans who have stopped watching the NBA, and I can understand why. The game has changed to a point where you don't like what you see. I completely understand that. Anthony Edwards is sort of that love letter to a bygone era. He is chirping constantly. He plays hard defense. He's the kind of guy, I don't think he really does it all often, but he's the kind of guy that's slapping the floor on defense, getting ready. Again, he makes villains of everybody. Everyone's a target for his trash talking. He literally doesn't care if you're LeBron James or a random guy in a 10-day contract. He will chirp you the exact same way, and it is awesome. He's athletic. He's funny. The whole thing. Like, he is the kind of guy, if he can just win a championship,
yep,
he's the face of the league kind of deal. He's a if you're somebody that misses defense in the league, number one, watch the current NBA playoffs. They're calling nothing. But also specifically watch Anthony Edwards. He's kind of the guy you'll love. But also this Knicks team, because they're not more talented than the Celtics. They're not. But they are playing so hard and so aggressive, and they got maybe a belief now. I think the same thing with Toronto. Toronto kind of had, I think after game two win, has a belief of this year's different. The years past demons don't matter. The Knicks couldn't beat any good team. They were 0-10 against the top teams in the East. They struggled against Detroit, a young Pistons team that has been essentially Cade Cunningham and a bunch of dudes. And yet they've taken two games in Boston, one in overtime, and then one last second great defensive play by Mikal Bridges. It's not just taking two games.
The Celtics have choked those. Ugly.
20-point comebacks, both of them.
Yeah.
Incredible TV.
You can't have that back-to-back and expect to survive the rest of the postseason.
803-0550, the number two call. Having a little bit of fun talking the playoffs here. Also, of course, we were talking Bills training camp, rookie camp heroes, if you've got any names to bring up. Rod Streeter's been brought up. That brought back some memories. But before we hit our next timeout, get her the ultimate pass to relaxation, renewal, and pure self-care bliss for Mother's Day with our Odyssey Self-Care Passport. Enjoy 13 incredible experiences at select spas, gyms, and wellness centers valued at over $1,400. Over 70% savings at $375. Visit getmyperks.com to get yours while supplies last. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Two sources at the University of North Carolina tell me that there is...
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Then a decision was made last week by the higher-ups inside the athletic department that had hired Bill Belichick to be the highest-paid public employee, not just coach, in the state of North Carolina at $10 million a year. And that decision was that Jordan Hudson is no longer allowed in the football building. She is not allowed on the football field. Quote, don't think you'll be hearing much from Jordan moving forward.
That was on Pablo Torre's show. Sadly, North Carolina says Jordan Hudson is still welcome in UNC's football facilities, despite obviously reports that she was banned. Quote, while Jordan Hudson is not an employee at the university or Carolina Athletics, she is welcome to the Carolina football facilities. Derek,
yes,
a generational Hard Knocks was taken away from us. If you remember, a few months ago, it was reported because Hard Knocks has been struggling to find a quote-unquote off-season Hard Knocks after the generational run by the Giants last year.
Yeah.
And how much of a, while I enjoyed it, and I think fans enjoyed it, it was not a good look for the current Giants regime. There's been a struggle to find, like, okay, how are we gonna fill that slot? There was an initial report that North Carolina was going to do it with Bill Belichick as their head coach, the whole thing. And it made sense to me at the time. It was, well, Bill's trying to build up the Carolina brand. They've got a recruiting hotbed, but North Carolina has not typically been great at college football. I think they have like one ACC championship back in 1980, and that's really about it. They're not bad by any means, but they're not great. Mack Brown had a real tough time winning there, and that's why they've ultimately gone to Bill Belichick. So it made sense to me. However, everything involving Bill Belichick and his girlfriend has been weird. And very just uncomfortable. I'm laughing about it, but it's an uncomfortable laugh of just like, this is a really weird situation.
And so Pablo Torre was obviously the one that we brought that sound in with. And I do think that he does bring up an interesting point of like, if there is an opportunity to try to help save your legacy a little bit, you want to make sure that you get things back on track. Because nobody is going to remember what you're doing as Bill Belichick if, for some reason, like these stories are continuing to be more of what people are going to remember him for.
Yeah, like if this becomes the headline, and it's partially because, like, you know, the longer you go in the public spotlight, the more risk you have of putting your legacy in harm's way. Actor, entertainer, athlete, you know, what have you? Any. Thing that is has a big public, you know, footprint. But yeah, like he has not coached a game yet at North Carolina, and I've got to imagine the university is not thrilled with the fact that every headline with Bill Belichick is not, oh, this amazing recruit is coming to Chapel Hill, this transfer target. No, it's, hey, did you see this weird interview on CBS Sunday Morning between Bill Belichick and his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson? Did you see that? You should watch the clip. It's super uncomfortable.
By the way, it wasn't Torre. It was he sourced a family member.
Okay.
There's deep worry about how detrimental Jordan can be for not just North Carolina, but for Bill's legacy, reputation, and everything that he's built and worked over for decades.
Because for a lot of people, the thing they will most remember is the last thing you did.
What have you done for me lately?
What have you done for me lately? Like, he has all the Super Bowl wins. He has all of that and everything like that. But if this is a tire fire in North Carolina, and part of it is because of his personal life, something that he's never really been open about.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Then all of a sudden, a lot of people will be like, yeah, great coach. That was weird at the end, wasn't it? That was really awful at the end, wasn't
it? It was a really weird crash out for him at the end, yeah.
And for a lot of people, even when you have a great career in anything, but the ending is bad, a lot of people will just bring it up because that's the first thing I remember. Peyton Manning, wonderful career, gets two Super Bowls. But most of the time when you talk about Peyton Manning, people will eventually acknowledge that the second Super Bowl, he was very much a passenger and not in the passenger seat. That man was in the back. Hanging out on his Game Boy. Like, that's what Peyton Manning did. And a lot of people bring it up that way. It's not going to tarnish Bill's legacy unless something horrific comes out about this, which that does not, I think, appear to be the case. But it will be this uncomfortable thing, especially if they don't win at Carolina, that a lot of people will be like, okay, that was strange.
People will then point to, well, this is why nobody in the NFL wanted to hire you to break the wins record.
Yeah, 100%. That'll be brought up a lot, too. Well, I mean, could you imagine an NFL team having to deal with this? North Carolina brought in Bill Belichick to bring in a name to put their football program on the map in an ACC that is ever-changing. And an ACC, by the way, that is not dominated like it was 5-6 years ago. Now, Clemson's still a very good program. It's not the Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson Clemson where it was like, oh, they're blowing out Alabama in a national championship. It's not that.
Yeah.
Even Miami last year with Cam Ward being the number one overall pick, lost a number of games. They never looked like a team that was going to win a national championship. So Carolina, with getting Bill Belichick, feels like in 2 years, they could be on the mountaintop of the ACC. He hasn't coached a game yet, and that already feels like it is not going
to
happen.
Yeah, it's starting to become this weird stories about him, or the things that we're talking about Bill Belichick have little to none to do about football anymore. And that's the part that is really, I don't want to call it worrisome, but definitely weird. So much so that I don't know how much else I don't know what else I can say about this. Other than, I guess, we'll see what happens. It's pretty much turned into like this
Well, all right. Sure. Whatever happens.
I'm so upset we're missing out on this Hard Knocks. Could you imagine? I think that's why North Carolina probably pulled the plug, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Internally, the AD, the school, the president, the whole thing, we're just being like, this cannot be how we're going to start the Bill Belichick era. And ultimately, it's still come out. There have still been these uncomfortable, you know, the CBS interview, the whole thing, and all these stories. But you got to wonder, because it's come off like his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, appears to be more like his publicist, his PR person, what have you. Like, she does kind of give off the vibe that she's more his assistant, that they're like, we cannot put this on camera. Like, this cannot be how we're presenting the university before Bill even coaches a game. We cannot do it.
Yeah.
And I'm upset as a fan because I would have watched every moment of that. It's why I watched the offseason one with the Giants. It's the uncomfortableness. It's you're watching teams that are making decisions that could be terrible, but they all have deep convictions about them. They have to in these jobs. And I complained a little bit about that before the draft with Brandon Bean. Like, I just take a guy. And they seem to have done that. Watching the Bills embedded, you know, they were a big fan of Harrison. TJ Sanders was in the conversation for them at 30. If Harrison was gone, they make a big trade up. Like, that's what I'm talking about. But you saw that with Joe Shane last year in the offseason Hard Knocks. For better or worse, he had convictions. They were going to do what they were going to do, and they were going to deal with the consequences afterwards. But when it doesn't work out,
it looks awful.
It looks awful. And could you imagine Belichick, first year in college? What's he doing? How's he dealing with that? There probably are some stumbles here and there. No fault to anybody. You take any kind of big college job, there probably is that, even the successful ones.
Yeah.
But then you add in the 24-year-old girlfriend who might be his publicist or whatever that role is, and kind of the weird interactions that are going on there, and how much can North Carolina really pull back? Because you already saw awkward moments happen for the Giants. It didn't matter. It happens. It still is going to happen. I think it was probably a smart move for them to be like, actually, you know what? Never mind. We're good.
Yeah, and again, it's getting to a point where there's this stories about Belichick that just, they don't have anything to do with football.
Yeah, absolutely,
and
nothing.
That is not good. And honestly, that's why a team, a university, anything will shut things down, is we can't let this story be bigger than the story we're trying to tell, which is about the football team.
Yep. 803-0550, the number two call. Going to take a quick time out here and get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here to get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. Join us at Par for a Purpose on May 19th and play a foursome at the Double Black Diamond Golf Course. A majority of the proceeds will benefit the 11-day Power Play. Registration includes lunch, dinner, two drink tickets, green fees, cart, and prizes. Visit WGR550/events.com to register now, courtesy of Ellicottville Chamber of Commerce and Labatt. Derek, real quick. I want to bring this up here because we haven't really gotten to mention it. Gabe Davis, released by the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know there's a little bit of hoopla on it, should the Bills go sign him back? It could be league minimum. It's never bad to have competition. I agree with all that. Where do you sit with the idea of if the Bills bringing Gabe Davis back? If they do it, whatever, what have you.
If they do it, I think so. Too many fans have trauma over his final season here, where he would alternate games where he legitimately had donuts on his stat line.
And I would argue I'm one of them, yep.
But you have to remember, that was him being the number two option. Bringing him back now, the depth chart looks different for you.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe Davis is not set up to be the number two option on this squad. He's probably more comfortably a four or five.
And probably with a very singular role.
When did we remember Gabe Davis being awesome? It was as a fourth option, fifth option kind of depth player that was just trying to come into his own on the roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. People are so mad about him that they want to eschew all logic because the rage is there. No, it's remarkably simple. If the Bills were to bring Gabe Davis back, he is not getting automatically thrown into wide receiver two again.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he does end up like playing primarily like the primary snaps on the outside, where you'd have to contend with Palmer, he'd have to contend with Coleman, and he's not getting he's not getting the slot.
No.
Shakir's got that.
That's right.
Samuel's probably his second option. So that means you're getting limited snaps, limited impacts, but that's also where Gabe Davis was at his best.
Yeah, in the limited role, doing really what he did very well. And me and Sal have talked about this a lot. Like, the value they got for him at a fourth-round pick is incredibly commendable.
Yeah.
They got a lot of value out of him.
People are a little too blind to that because it's easy to be angry instead of remember everything within context.
Yep. I will say, though, if he's brought back, I do think he's a good enough receiver to still be in the league. I think absolutely.
Yeah.
I wonder –
if he's the fourth receiver on the depth chart, that's not bad.
But so on that, I already wonder what the Bills' wide receiver depth chart slash target count, what have you, is going to look like. You had Gabe Davis in there. Number one, I already think with Elijah Moore, I am an Elijah Moore guy. We'll see about training camp, but going in, I'm very excited for him.
Right,
I already think someone like Curtis Samuel could be really fighting for his Bills career here, even if he does not cut, just in terms of like how many targets are you really going to get. I think Moore could be that kind of guy. What does this depth chart look like if they add Gabe Davis? I agree, competition's never a bad thing. I also do wonder how much of a role he maybe has on these modern Bills, which is separation, quick hits, yak yards. They kind of feel like they don't really want to throw the deep ball as much as maybe all of us would really want them to. And that's what Gabe Davis was good at, was getting open down the field, sideline merchant. He was unbelievable, by the way, on the sidelines. He was incredible.
Toe tapping.
Yeah.
Tons of times.
I wonder what his role would be. I think the Bills absolutely could find a way. Obviously, he'd been here for 4 years, but
I think it takes an injury for Davis to get scooped up by any team at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
Heading into like your mini camps or your OTAs, like someone is doing something while working out in the offseason.
Pittsburgh could do it now.
Pittsburgh could do it now. Yes. But also, I don't know their game plan anymore.
Tank for 26 when they host the
draft.
They
can't.
I know.
Mike Tomlin signed a contract with the devil.
He's going to win at least 9 games.
He's getting 8 wins at minimum.
I don't see the talent on that team. They maybe could do it. We will see on all of that. That's going to do it for me and Derek. Again, today's show brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Bills rookie minicamp gets going at 12:30. Sal Capaccio will have you covered on social media. He'll also be joining Show Up on the Bulldog at 4 p.m. today to give his thoughts on that. But coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live, you're listening to WGR.